The Ric Flair Show.
My name's Ric Flair.
Woo! Woo! To be the man, you gotta beat the man. And I'm saying, woo! Right here, I'm the man. Woo!
The 16-time world champion. Woo!
Back behind the mic and telling it like it is.
Woo!
If you're not carrying the big gold, you're second best no matter what you tell yourself.
I'm the best.
Y'all playing catch up ball. To the Nature Boy.
And now, your hosts of the Ric Flair Show, Ric Flair and Conrad Thompson.
Woo!
Let's get going, man. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it, buddy.
Ready when you are.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, 16 times your world champion, the host of the Ric Flair Show, along with the living legend, Conrad Thompson, owner of the Conradison Estate. And by the way, let me just throw this in here right now. I saw Nick Saban's summer place. Nick, you could park your summer place in Conrad's garage, okay? Conrad, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I don't know about that.
Today, I am proud to tell you that God created some special people. He created heroes. He started out with Samson. Then there was Hercules, then there was Wyatt Earp, John Wesley Harden, Wild Bill Hickok, and then God gave the world and earth King Tonga, none other than Tonga, better known as Haku. Without a doubt, the toughest person to ever step into a ring anywhere in our world, and I'm talking to Harley Race, who is my very close friend, or anybody else. There won't be an argument about the legendary Haku. King, how are you, man?
Good, thank you. My goodness, thank you, Rick. You know, like, I feel like, you know, I'm the Samson now, and the Hercules.
Yeah, well, you are, you are. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, Arn Anderson, a.k.a. calls... Haku, the human Vegematic. So you can figure that out for yourself. But
that's what happened when you all bring me all the opportunity. You know, I was hungry. I was, you know, ready to explore the world, especially coming from a third world country. You know, that the kingdom, a little kingdom in the South Pacific called Tonga, you know, that the king sent me over to Japan, you know, to be a representative of the country and, you know, sumo wrestler to start with. Rick, you know that.
And, yes. You know, King, I'm not interrupt you. Tell them the whole story. The Japanese came to Tonga looking for young sumo wrestlers. You were like 12 years old, right? 14?
14, yes.
Okay, so start there. They came to look for people like you, an individual that they thought could make it, correct?
Yeah, they think that, you know, because of our culture, it's just like Japan, that we sit on the floor and they believe that, you know, your bag is strong. You know how Japan in those days with the judo and, you know, all
yes,
karate and stuff like that, you know, and, you know, they think that Tonga will be a good little... We were lucky, you know, they had Samoa and Fiji there, but, you know, our king also was a big fan of Japan. So, you know, and also the sumo, because our king at the time, King Tupou IV, was also about 6'7", and, you know, it was about 300-400 pounds at the time. But, you know, he loved sumo. So, you know, that was a great opportunity for him in his own, you know, being the king. And, you know, he thought maybe this... something that bring to his people and bring the island to help, you know, to help his people, I'm sorry, to, you know, to get out there and, you know, try sumo.
So you went to Japan at the age of 14. Keep going, man. It's a great story.
Yeah, it was, you know, rugby players. There were 20 of them. And, you know, I was just 10th grade, you know, 14 years old and barbarian. Barbarin was one of them, you know, those rugby players. He was a great rugby player, and he was 2 years older than me at the time. Oh, it's 2 years, I'm sorry. And you know, they came in, the sumo people came into our school. You know, I was, me and Barbarin were boarding school. So the 20 rugby players, there was our senior that he was selected, you know, supposed to select the whoever that they want to go on the to Japan for sumo. So, you know, me being, you know, what I believe in everything, you know, go to church, Sunday school, and, you know, really, I said a little prayer there, you know, God, you know, if you think this talent is good enough for me, please give it to me. And, you know, you all have to see it. I still see it today, you know, how these people, they have no idea who I was there, you know, and I was just part of the students that were watching all those big, fat people on diapers that they came into the school, you know. So, you know, we were watching it from outside, and they're supposed to go into the office there, and, you know, it's unbelievable, you know, how this guy, they never seen me before, turn and look at me and, you know, just turn and walk forward. And after the meeting and everything, they told us to go to the assembly room, assembly hall, where we get together, you know, for our meeting and stuff like that, the whole school. So, you know, out of nowhere, here comes that the principal. I heard the principal, you know, calling me, my name, out of nowhere. He said, make sure that you are going to the assembly hall, because sometimes, you know, we sneak out of meetings and stuff like that and climb the coconut tree and, you know, do it. You know, for probably you all don't understand, Rick, but, you know, that's our food and everything, you know. You know.
Yeah.
At boarding school, you know, that's what, you know, a piece of bread, my goodness, you know, it's like a piece of steak, you know, those days for us. So, you know, that's what happened. We went in there, they draw a circle called Minami no Shima. It was one of the rugby players push around one of the guys there. There were two sumo wrestlers were there. So, and out of nowhere, that here they call me, that I was just sitting with the students there. And, of course, I did the same thing. I push around the guy, and, you know, he turned around and looked at me, you, and you, exactly the word that our boss was saying to us. You and the band. He didn't speak any English whatsoever. And that's what happened. You know, we...
And you're 14, right, now?
14 years old, yes.
Yeah. Hey, well, King, when did they first put the test on you to see how tough you were?
We went there, and of course, they had to put us in, you know, training, start training, you know, for what they call my sumo. You know,
yeah.
It was, you remember, Fukuoka, Kyushu.
Yeah.
You know, Kyushu, Fukuoka, that was our first... a rookie tryout there. So, and, you know, we went to Tokyo and trained there, and then we have to meet, you know, catch up with the rest of the stable or the club. They were already in Kyushu. So we walked right in there and, you know, started. We had three matches to prove to them that we can, you know, that we can do the sumo. And, you know, that was, you know, good. There were four of us, one from the police department, one from the military, and two of us from the from high school. One was senior. I was the 14 years old.
But Barb didn't go with you, right?
No, Barbarian was selected on the second second time.
Yes, so, okay.
Yeah.
Well, how much did you weigh then?
Oh, my goodness. I was only 165 pounds.
Yeah.
Skinny. Jeez. And lean, yeah.
Well, when did you start getting bigger? I tell people, I'm not jumping the story, but...
Yeah.
You know, before I'm telling Conrad and our audience, And this is taped, Haku. I'm just, you know, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but before I knew who Haku was, I was in Puerto Rico. And Haku only weighed about 245, guys. And he was a phenomenal performer. We wrestled several hours, but I would have never, ever chopped him as hard as I did if I knew how tough he was. He was so nice and easy going. It was just a beat, but no mistake. At 245 pounds, the guy was like Ricky Steamboat. And I promise you, I feel that way from the bottom of my heart. You could really work. So go ahead. Start telling everybody before you started beating everybody up.
I really appreciate Rick. You know, that was something, you know, for me with my career. I think that was open up for me there when you came in there twice and, you know, you took me under your, as being the champion. You know, you were so nice and kind and, you know, of course, you know, following you guys, you and Piper, God bless your soul. You know, that was something to me. It was unbelievable, you know, as being from Japan and all that stuff like that. You know, it was unbelievable. But with you and Harley Race, you know, I think that's the break for me through there to start my career from Puerto Rico there.
Yeah.
Besides beating up the people in Puerto Rico. But, you know.
So can we jump ahead a couple of years and tell the one story about the Scotch Mist? are they still trying to extradite you back to Puerto Rico?
I just don't want to go back there anymore.
Tell that story. It's Jesse Barr you saved, right?
Oh, the one in Puerto Rico?
Yes, yes.
No, it was a kid from, believe it or not, it was a Jewish kid from South Africa.
Okay.
Supposed to be a son of the promoter or something, David. I remember the David, but I forgot. Yeah, I don't remember the last name. But anyway, he was there, and, you know, I was eating in the restaurant at Tanama Hotel. And all of a sudden, Victor, you remember Victor, came over.
Of course.
Young Victor. He came over and said, Thomas, do you mind if you take him out, you know, for a couple of drinks? You know, he likes this girl at the bar, but, you know, he doesn't really know what's going on around here. And if you take him, you know, it would be nice. I said, sure. So after I ate, you know, we went out to the bar that his girlfriend was there, the girl that he likes. So we're standing there, have a couple beers, and he introduced me to the girl, and we're having a good time and everything. All of a sudden, you know, about 2 hours later, this guy show up. Just walk right in, grab the girl, kiss her, you know, put his tongue down his throat, her throat. And I said, what in the world is this? I said, David, do you know this guy? David said, no. So what the heck you let him do that, the girl you like? You know, I didn't know if it, you know, it's just me, young. You know, and I said, I don't like that, you know. You're my friend, and you're my friend, and, you know, I said, bro, you can't do that. This is my friend here, David. You know, he likes this girl, and he wants to have a good time with her, and we've been having a good time, buying her a drink and all this stuff. He turned around and said, what? What did you say? I said, yeah, that's my friend's girl. You know, and he said, no, that's my girl. I slapped that guy so hard that he went down on his knee, grabbed him by the neck. There's a window. You know, it's one of those Caribbean, that wooden window is open. And, you know, stupid me, I grabbed him by the neck and, you know, by his pants. And I was going to throw him through the window outside from the second floor, mind you. We're on the second floor.
I thought you did throw him through it.
So that sofa, the chairs and the thing, there was a big sofa there, you know. That hit me right on the foot, and I went down with the guy. he was sitting on the sofa while I'm on my knees on the floor there, and you know, I just hammer him from the floor. So here comes the owner, and he was giving me, oh yeah, he's a bitch, you know, what are you doing? You know, he's the best customer. You're the best customer my ass. I've been paying all this the last 2 hours, and you're telling me that he's the best customer? So he's, I get up from there. All of a sudden, I turn around, there's this guy's, I guess his people. I started looking at me and said, what are you guys going to do about it? You know, and here we go, fighting and throw them through the walls and stuff like that. And then, you know, I said, but, you know, I was worried about the kid. You know, I said, David, get behind my back and, you know, look for the exit. Look for the exit, you know. And these people were, you know, Puerto Ricans, they were going to beat the heck out of both of us. So I fought them, and, you know, and he said, come on, you know, just keep coming, you know, the stairs to go down. As we went down, you know, and we ran off outside the thing. As we ran out, there is bikers are sitting there, Puerto Rican bikers, sitting on the side there because there's a little grocery store there with food and stuff like that. And of course, I ran out and hit one of the bikers without, I didn't mean it. So this guy got up and grabbed his helmet and started swinging at me. I started beating up the guy. And of course, here's the guy that, and you know, the kid said, Tonga, come this way. You know, David was running in front of me. And, you know, here comes this guy was running towards us. He said, you know, I'm a police officer, stop. I hit him so hard. I don't know. And we get running. So all of a sudden, you know, I saw that the police cars are coming from the other side of Condado. And by the time I said anything, you know, that one of the police car ran over my foot and hit the brake. And by the time I turned to hit the guy, you know, the damn shotgun was right on my my head. So, yeah, that was stopping us. I said, what happened? He said, what happened? You move our shoes. I said, what did I do? Stupid. So, you know, of course, they grab us there and throw me in the van, and they grab the kid and put him in a car. So I was with two police in the van there, and, you know, the kid was sitting between these two guys. I guess, you know, they hit him with a stick or whatever while, you know, we're going to the police station. And the son of a gun, these two guys in the van, they were running, hit the brake, and they were, you know, turning left and right. And I'm bouncing off the damn van back there, you know, where they put me. I said, I'm going to kill you both. I'm going to kill you. In the van, you know, I'm hitting the walls and stuff like that. So, yeah, that was the start of the thing. And they threw us in jail. And, you know, I was always telling, if you remember, Ricky, there was this place was called the White Bear. As we're going on,
yes,
the other side there, Ponce, and so as you know, leave town, it was on the left-hand side. So, yeah. You know, they always tell me, you know, don't ever go to this place. They're going to kill you. Nobody ever come, you know, alive from this place. So, you know, I never thought that I was going to end up there one day. But anyway, that's where they threw me and David. We walk in there, you know, wear those uniform and everything. And all of a sudden, they saw, there was a jail there, they, you know, people were in there, they saw me. I guess they saw me on TV after all this time. And all of a sudden, it's breakfast time. You can hear the cop running through the, you know, running on the steel bars, you know, of the jail there, you know, King Tonga. The officers, police officers, and everybody look at what the heck is going on here. But anyway, you know, after that, we wear the uniform. I walk into jail there. I said, if somebody touches me, I'm going to take a few with me, you know, before they fuck me in the ass. But you know, the kid that, you know, I was, you know me, Rick, you know, I have a responsibility to take care of that kid, you know, and I protect him. I said, you know, David, look behind me. Is there anything happen? You know, it's going to be a fight, you know. But, you know, I think differently. As we walk in jail, everybody moves back. They, like, they're trying to clean up and, you know, put me, you know, a corner there. They say, come on, you know. I was a celebrity in that jail.
But oh, that's good, man. Well, that's when you haven't been back since, though, have you?
Yeah, I went back, you know, for trial two times.
Yeah.
And after that, you know, they told me that I had to come for the third one, and I told them to fuck themselves. I'm not coming back to another one. You know, I was with Bravo then in Montreal. So, you know, every time I go there, you know, nothing happened. So, you know, after that, I said, you know, why should I go back there, you know? And so I just, after that, they were, you know, they were looking for me to throw me in jail there. So we could call me, you know, man, you had to come back, you know, otherwise they're going to come in. I said, so we go, stick it up.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to.
No, I know. I don't blame you. I that South Africa kid was working the Portland territory. That's why I thought it was a Jesse Barr guy. I met that kid as well. He was working for Don Owen, and the Don sent him down to Puerto Rico for Carlos.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I was saying it was Jesse Barr. Well, you know, it's funny because I need the audience to understand what kind of guy Haku is. So I'm in Japan wrestling, and my wife, Beth, Charlotte's mother, and David, Charlotte and Reed's mother, was coming to Japan to meet me, and Haku was on the same flight, Conrad. And so they had a mechanical in Honolulu, and had to spend the night at the Holiday Inn, he checked Beth in the hotel, Conrad, God's honest truth, and he slept outside her door all night long.
Wow.
To make sure she was safe. And then we got to Japan and we had the damnest party that night. Haku. Jesus Christ. What was I thinking about bringing her? I almost got divorced there with you.
Poor Beth, but, you know, that's what happened. And, you know, I'm sure she understands with all the fans. And, you know, Ricky, you know how Ricky is. He probably know you by now, Ricky.
Yeah, thank you.
fun, and you know all this stuff, and you know it's just that's Ric Flair, you know. Yeah. And he show up, and he feels good, and everything. You know, we fall down, and then you know all of a sudden, you know, he got up on. Remember that, Rick? Got up.
Yes.
The bar was right in Ginza, and this is the most expensive. You know, place in part, I don't know how, but in the world, maybe, you know, between Paris and Ginza, Tokyo. And, you know, I remember, Ricky, you got up right there. And Beth said to me, Tonga, please tell him to get down. Just before I turn around and look at you, your pants was on the floor. And you're walking naked right on top to you.
No. Are you sure that was me?
Conrad,
can you understand why we had so much fun? My God,
yes, sir.
I knew I couldn't get any trouble. Hey, King, tell the story about you and Mike Hegstra and Hawk with the basketball players in Roppongi.
What? Oh my goodness.
Yeah. The guy did go out the second story window.
it was those Irish guys, you know, it was Irish bar, and, you know, I walked in there by myself, being, you know, drunk and everything, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I guess one Japanese was in there know that I was a wrestler, and, you know, of course, the fake and all this stuff, they turned around and said, you know, mate, you're fucking wrestling, fake wrestling, you know. And I said, oh, yeah, I am. I'm the fake wrestler. You know, me, I always protect the business. And I always tell everybody, I said, do you want to see the real thing? You know, and I had to show them the real thing.
But that wasn't the time with Mike, though, with the Hegstrand, was it? The time with Hegstrand is when the basketball players were in there?
I'm not sure. No, I think there was another one.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, yeah,
you can't bring up everything, yeah, otherwise, you know.
Well, I've got some fun legendary stories that some of our listeners want to hear about. And Rick, you kind of mentioned his name earlier, and you're saying Jesse Barr. I think in '87 he was wrestling under the name Jimmy Jack Funk. And the legend, Mr. Aku, is that he had some sort of issue with you backstage, and you guys got into a scuffle, and you pulled an eye out. Is that true or false?
That's false.
Okay.
It was in Ohio. I'm glad you bring up 87. I forgot that. A year, but we just had a big meeting, WWF, then, you know, and Vince were asking, he was asking us, guys, it's about time, you know, you don't know how big you are now, you know, with the TV and everything is going on, you know, it's about time for you guys to act a little bit more professional, go to sleep early and all this stuff, you know, and catch your flight in the morning. And, you know, because it was, you always early flights. So
yep.
Okay, I think what the meeting was over in Cleveland or somewhere. And then we had to go from there to Dayton, Ohio. I myself and, you know, and that's how we end up. It was me, Kim Doug, and Jesse Barr there, you know. And we drove from wherever we at and get to this, you know, I love country, but I'm a country.
I know.
Yeah, I love those country music and the country bars, you know, and that's where we end up. That there was a band there and the whole thing. But we only have like 45 minutes, I think, before they close. So, of course, we brought like 2 cases of beer right there, right in front of the band. And, you know, the band was going while we were chasing, you know, the beer. We were drinking the beer like crazy. Anyway, by the time that we turned around, there was this, the band, and, you know, invited us to go to a place, one of the yeah, they have their fans, I guess. There were about 4 or 5 girls who were standing, you know, with them. And, you know, they invited us to go to the one of the girls' places and yeah, have a drink. So, you know, sure, why not? You know, here we are. But where we, you know, me, Bar, and King Doug, who is this girl, was driving a, you know, beautiful Cadillac, the old two-door, I forgot the name of that. And the car was just painted, you know, and I guess, you know, poor girl's saving that, you know, you save and paint the car, and it's beautiful. Anyway, we get to her place. The guys were coming from the back there. Anyway, I got out. There's Jesse Barr already climbing on top of the car. And the poor girl is screaming her head off and crying, you know, my goodness, I can't, you know, I can't believe you do this to my car. So, as I said, bro, man, you know, get off. So he come down, and, you know, Kim Doug was telling him, you know, man, no good, you no good. And, you know, he turned around, and I said, man, you can't do that, you know. They're bringing us here to, you know, have a few more drinks and stuff like that. So he turned around and said to me, which side you at, you know? Are you on his side or my side? I said, well, I'm nobody's side. I'm just telling you, you know, there's kind people here giving us, you know, to have a party, and here you are. Anyway, he said, oh, now I know which side you're on. And then I turned around, here he comes. You know, he was an amateur wrestler, and he was going to take me down. Just lucky that I don't know what happened. My foot went up and hit him on the head. And as he kind of struggled there and, you know, get around, he came back again, and, you know, he was coming to take me down again, and there was the, you know, boom, 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 turn him around, and I went right for, you know, for his eye. I felt the eyes was on my fingers, but I said, well, I can't do this, you know. So I just leave it there. I didn't pull it out, Kim Duck jumping, you know, Connor, you know, what's going on here? And, you know, that was it. After that, you know, I just walk away and have a phone call, you know, and lucky, you know, whatever happened after that, they told us to go home and all, you know, Vince was pissed at me, especially, you know, and I talked to him on the phone, and I should tape it so we can, you know, it just, not because of anything, but because I never heard of him, and I never see him pissed like, I mean, mad like that, and, you know, that I, the call was from, I believe it was Houston, Texas, that I had to call him, you know, from there, and he cussed me out like, you know, every, you know, bad words on that we all know about. But, you know, I didn't blame him because, you know, it was pissed because, you know, here we have a big meeting and, you know, the things happen. And I, you know, what can I say? I told him, I am so sorry. Things happen and, you know, that's what happened. He said, shut up, you son of a bitch. You know, like, that, yeah, and, you know, there was, but, you know, hey, he was right. He was our boss. He was the thing. But that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. I didn't, you know, I didn't take his eye off. I felt it in my fingers.
Hey, it was so, you know. King, I tell you what was great. I saw you this year with your wife, who is beautiful. And it's a miracle that you have survived. Because Haku never did anything but have fun, Conrad.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
He wasn't a guy that ever ran around on his wife or anything. I mean, he just wanted to have fun. And I was one of those guys, the instigator, that always, even when he didn't want to go, I would say, come. Or if he'd say, I'll have a couple of beers, then I'd say, well, just have one, Jack. I'm guilty. But as were a lot of other guys, because he can drink beer all day long. And he won't blink an eye. But when you get him on the Jack Daniels, it's a whole different world.
There we go. Now you're talking. Tell them how you put the, you know, every time I go down to the bar that, you know, we're supposed to meet there, my drink is already sit there. And he'll,
well, that's because I wanted to have fun with you. It's so much fun. You know what? Go ahead.
How much Jack Daniel did you put in there?
A lot. Hey, listen, Conrad, the greatest story of all time is me, Haku, Arn, everybody's drinking at the Jukebox in Charleston, South Carolina. And the manager, of all people, were sitting there at the bar, ordered a last round. And the guy says it's the last call and all that. And then Haku goes, oh, come on, man, one more round. But very polite, you know, just one more round, right? So the manager, who's about 6 foot tall, comes around and has me standing there, Arn, a couple other guys, right? You just tell him his last call, right? Instead, he takes his little finger, right, his front number one finger, and starts touching Haku in the chest, pointing at him, going, I'm not telling you again, buddy. You're out of here. And before he could get you're out of here Haku had him goozled. He was holding him by his feet, were swinging in the air. Next thing you know, the cops are coming, and me and Haku are running down the street with Colonel Parker trying to hide from the cops. Do you remember, Haku?
Yeah.
The cops were everywhere, man. 10 squad cars, and we're trying to hide Haku, me and Parker, and go ahead.
We tried to get you away, you know, before anything, you know, will go big there, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, what's his name, the sergeant, whatever, took you off there, and, you know, me and Parker went down the street. I didn't know how they found us. The cops were following me and Parker there. What's his name? Sergeant, that he took you, and then he come back. You know, I told him to make sure you're all right, take you to the other side, you know, otherwise, I don't want the cops to see you with us. And that's what he did. But he came back, though, Rick. Sergeant something. Remember that we had?
Yeah, I do. I kind of remember that. Not I just long. Remember yeah. you calling me and saying, I got to get a lawyer.
And you're sitting standing there, and you know, poor Parker is that, boys, please, you know, they're coming to take us. I said, you know, don't worry about it. You know, they won't take you.
Yeah.
If they want to take anybody, it's me. I'm the one who did it. You guys go, you know. But anyway,
but you didn't even hit anybody. You just gave them the goozle.
Yeah. But, you know, in the same time, he's still town. You know, the police were just trying to make sure, I guess, keep the peace there. But, you know, the funny thing there, there were about six cops there, men or seven, with one girl. So I request them. That was the funny one. Thank God they were good with me. I said, nobody is going to put the handcuff on me. And then they all look at me, I said, you know, because it hurts. I've done it before.
Conrad, are you hearing all this?
It's too much. You know, and that's the thing is I feel bad, but the internet has so many of these stories. I feel like we could talk about stories like this.
Well, we got to tell one more, which is the most legendary probably of all. And then we'll go back and talk some wrestling, but East St. Louis, which is a tough town. Kurt Hennig,
wow.
Haku, and Haku walks out into the parking lot from the country western joint. I can't remember the name of it, but we all went over there, and we knew there was going to be trouble. We just anticipated it. I went to jail there one time, but Kurt Hennig was getting the living crap beat out of him by about five guys, correct, Haku?
It was the whole damn bar there, and I can't believe it because, you know, Rick, we've been to this bar, and I thought they know us, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, I started it again because, you know, remember the seamstress?
Yeah.
For WWE. Yeah, that's how it started. You know, one of the guys,
Julie and Terry and all them, yeah.
Right. One of the guy called Terry a whore, and you know, and Terry was start crying. I said, what's wrong with you? The guy said to me, I call her a whore. She looked like a whore. I said, really? You call my wife a whore? You know, and that's how he started. And run him to the wall, you know. By the time you get down there, you know, there were about three, four guys were all over. Again, I still have my pants at home and my shirt that night, you know. And, I mean, the fingers, they were trying to grab my balls and everything. And, you know, one guy kicked me right in the face, and I saw the star. That's when, you know, I went crazy. I get up from that, you know, I said, you know, this same damn thing here, you know, they're going to kill me. I get up, and out of nowhere, like Rick said, Samson came out, and I beat the living shit out of that. You know, you can see my pants with those fingers, you know, tear my, you know, that's how hard they were trying to grab my balls. You know, came out of the damn thing and, you know, kicked the shit out of the two guys there. And, you know, the other one ran. As they ran, he ran through the door there. Here comes the police.
Yeah. You know, how many times did they mace you?
A few times. And then, you know, they hit me with a damn stick. And then, you know, as they go to throw me into the car, my goodness, if I didn't, you know, grab the police on my right hand side, Bobby, you know, they're going to, you know, take my head off. That's how mad they were on the thing. And that's when I turned around. The tall guy was about probably 6'4". I grabbed the police, jumped on his back, and bit him right on the damn neck. You know. And, oh, my goodness, it was all the other thing. So,
I don't mean to laugh, but look, these stories are all the truth, Conrad. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and, you know, that's, my goodness, I'm fortunate that, you know, they didn't shoot me right there, you know. But, you know, lucky thing, you know, the girls were there. They screaming and, you know, you're going to kill him, you're going to kill him, you know. I guess they back off, you know, but the stick were, the stick were everywhere on my back and my head, you know. So that was the night in East St. Louis.
what did Vince say about that?
Vince didn't hear about that until later. Of course, with, you know, the thing, I believe Perfect just hit the belt, Continental belt, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, we were in somewhere that, you know, geez, I remember the town, one of the smallest states in the, here in the state. Where is that? Upstate. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about 1989. There's another famous story that everybody has heard about, and Rick has actually told this one on the podcast. And I'm not sure that you were there, Rick, or if it's just wrestling legend, but in 1989 in Baltimore at the airport bar, a guy calls wrestling fake, and he left the bar without a nose. What happened?
Yeah, and that's why I'm still working today, because of that stupid
thing. Yeah. I think somebody bit it off.
Yeah, somebody. I don't know who it was, but I was just happy to walk by there. Somebody bit his nose off, and, you know, all those guys were, that they came into the courthouse and complained that I, you know, beat them up also. I never beat up anybody.
Hey, King.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyway, I've got to tell you this. So, I don't get to see the King as much as I used to, Conrad Haku, but, when I do, like, he came to Charlotte to shoot a commercial a couple of years ago, and I got him to come out for a while.
You.
And
thank you. Yeah, you and you got me and Barbarian to do the commercial there, Rick. Thank you. If I didn't say that.
No problem. But I met with you. You came in early, and we went to the Brio. And, you know, it's one of these guys, Conrad, you've got to meet him and be around him to understand. It's kind of like, if I said to you I'm bringing Hercules or Samson or Wild Bill Hickok, you know all the stories, but you actually got to meet them. And, of course, it just takes me just a little bit. If I can just get his attention for a little bit on the Jack Daniels, and then the whole world changes. I took him all around Charlotte. It's like walking around with Andre the Giant.
Don't say that, because he had work, you know, my boss, Mike Cutchin, is keep telling everybody, don't give him the brown liquor, because no problem. That's it. No, it just tastes so good that I have to try.
Well, I want to say in Orlando or in Dallas this year, I saw you, and you didn't come down to the bar one time, did you?
No, I was in Dallas because I wasn't with the wife.
I know you didn't, but I'm saying that's a lot. That's a whole different guy than the guy I've known for all these years. I'm very proud of you for that moment. I haven't grown up that much yet.
No, nope.
I'm trying.
Yeah. So you know, you can't. you can grow up. That's life, you know. That's what my boss always said. Yeah, you know, you can't grow up, Tonga. You know, we have to just, you know, be you. Don't grow up. I said, no, I had to grow up.
Yeah. Rick, you mentioned him a minute ago. Andre the Giant was a tag team partner of Haku's, and Bobby Heenan once famously said that one of the only people in the world that Andre was scared of was Haku. Do you have any funny Andre stories?
I don't, but I mean, nobody. I mean, this, I'm not saying this because he's on the phone. Nobody screwed around with Haku. I've never seen anybody in their right mind, or certainly nobody in our business, say even and I was surprised to hear the bar tried to take you down. I didn't think bar even did that. But it was to no avail. People just don't do that. And he's got so much respect and built such a legend, and he's been able to stay married with a beautiful family, which is a miracle. Because of all, not because of anything he did to hurt anybody, but just having fun and the way our society is now, which is, God forbid, you can't do anything anymore now. And I mean, I wouldn't even try to get him drunk at a bar now, because you just never know what's going to happen. It's so bad with social media. But he's in such a good place. I will tell you one of the greatest stories. So Bischoff was creating this character named Glacier.
Yeah.
You remember Glacier, Haku?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I was at the Marriott in Atlanta on Riverdale Road with Bischoff, and Haku was there, and Glacier wasn't. And I told Bischoff, and he actually gave Haku a job, thank God, that Haku could beat Glacier in 15 seconds. They spent 6 months on that gimmick. It never drew a dime. And Haku could have ate him. I mean, Arn and I used to laugh about it riding on the road. Can you believe Eric Bischoff, who knows some mixed martial arts, thinks that Haku, that Glacier could beat Haku? I mean, hello, where have we been? Jesus Christ.
Bobby, he can. He was much younger, you know. The old timer, you know, can only go so far. You know, Glacier is such a great guy. You know, just, you know, what Eric Bischoff was believe on, and, you know, he already spent money and all this stuff. But, you know, the kid is a great kid. He knows what he's doing and, you know, all that good stuff.
You're talking about Glacier?
He's a gentleman. Yeah, Glacier is a gentleman.
Oh, yeah, very good. Yeah. This was nothing against him. This was not a personal thing. It was just underestimating who you were. In understating, not really appreciating what we were putting ourselves into. I mean, I'm saying this, and Barb is my good friend. Barbarian does not argue with Haku. That's just the way it is.
Ricky, I remember that, you know, when Bischoff told me that I had to audition. My goodness, I was like, I know I really want this job, but audition. I didn't know that, you know, I'm going to make a movie here, that I'm in a movie. You know, remember that, Ricky?
Of course I do. Of course.
Yeah.
It was insanity. We were at Disney.
Yeah. But thank God that you talked to him and, you know, and calm him down that I have to get the job, you know, with the Parker as his bodyguard.
You were as his bodyguard, yeah. And actually, you were. And mine, and Arn's, and Terry Funk.
But, you know, the answer for calling it Christian, yes, I had a great time with Andre the Giant. You know, Andre, again, you know, God bless his soul. I don't know why he wants to be me to be his partner, but, you know, we had a great time. You know, the big man likes, you know, his food and his drinks and his women. So, you know, I'm just happy to be there and, you know, be his partner. And, you know, there's something also that I respected. You know, I always you know, I grew up in Japan, the respect, you know, for you guys, Rick, was unbelievable, right? You know,
yes.
You like King, you know, especially you and, you know, the champion and Harley Race. You know, and that's the thing with Andre. You know, I wanted to do the same thing because I grew up with that. You know, carry your bags and carry everybody's bag. You know, I wanted to do the same thing to Andre. But, you know, that was something that even when we become champion, he said to me, no, boss, this is my belt, this is my bag. You go to work, I go to work. And that's what, you know, always he always carried his bag, you know, even though with the foot was hurting so bad. You know, and we stopped before a couple of drinks to make sure he's not there. But, you know, that was the fun part.
Of course.
Yeah,
no. Oh, man. It is true. It's funny because it's not the same way now, but the Japanese culture, the people were so respectful over there. I mean, and Haku, yeah. I think what he means, he, you know, basically spent like 10 years of his life over there. So the manners and everything else you develop. But also,
yeah.
I think you'll have to admit that growing up over there can make you pretty tough, especially in those dojos, huh?
Yeah, yeah. In the dojo, you get everything. You learn, and you know, just how they believe is just like the flag. Everything
yeah.
is going around. You know, you start from the bottom and you go to the top. The kids that start from the bottom, you take care of them, and, you know, one day that's the future of wrestling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's the future.
Exactly.
They look at it differently. You know, that's life to them. You know, that's how they look at it. That's their life. That's how they're going to make their, you know, in their way in Japan. So the respect and, you know, all the that you grew up with at the dojo, that's how you're going to live. That's what you're going to live with, you know.
Hey, Haku, I'm going to ask, in all your years over there, did anybody ever mess around with you, like Yatsu or Jumbo?
No. There was, but that's the different, Rick, you know, the respect, you know, for your senior.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what, you know, they can beat the heck out of you and you can still stand there. That's respect. You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? And then, you know, one day I'm going to do the same thing they do to me or do to whoever. You know, they accept that it's going to happen, and if it's going to happen, that's how it's going to be. You know, you just,
yeah.
you know, take it like a man, and, you know, and that's what it is. But it never happened. You know, there was something. You know,
well, I think I would have heard if it did. I just didn't know because, you know, a lot of the guys, which it's different now, and unless you experienced it, the kids in Japan in the 70s and 80s, they all thought they were tough. You know
yeah,
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
real tough. They mean, like, fight Harley, yeah. fight Terry Funk, right, fight right. Haku. I mean, anybody.
Yeah.
And beat and kill me.
No.
They left me alone because they knew I was your buddy.
Haku, I've got to ask a question yeah. that Kevin Sullivan told a story to us once about that almost seems make-believe, but he says that once upon a time you guys were in a bar playing pool, some guy made a slur at you, some sort of racial slur, and he got chunks bitten out of his back.
It was... That's the devil, all right?
Yeah.
I told the story. You know, but... you know, it's a shame for me to say that, but that's, you know, the moment and everything that, you know, like that, you know, I've been calling all kind of names, you know. I walk in the, you know, middle of Nashville and they've been calling me a nigger and all this stuff, you know. That, you know, call me and, you know, coconut, you know, fucking coconut, you know, assholes and stuff like that. But, you know, that's part that, you know, the disrespect, I think, is always, you know, like we just talked about. You know, I come from Tonga, that we have a king and all that stuff. We have nobles, you know, and we all respect them. And then you go to Japan, you know, and live the sumo wrestlers, supposed to be, you know, the last samurai you know, life in Japan that, you know, that lives, you know, they still wear the kimono, the hair, you know, style of the samurai and everything, you know. So, you know, that's the respect that I had in me, you know. Why do you have to say that to me? Why you call me a nigger? Why you call me a fucking coconut? You know, that's the thing that I, you know, so, you know, those are the things that it kept to me. And, you know, hey, I never call you anything. I have been, you know, we've been having a couple of drinks and, you know, we're playing pool here, you know. Why do you have to get involved? And that's when I just, you know, back to the same thing in Puerto Rico. This guy, you know, that, you know, came in from Philadelphia and, you know, called me a fucking Puerto Rican. He didn't even know who I was, you know. And but he was Puerto Rican, living over there. That was my first lawsuit out of the damn WWF. So I beat the heck out of him and kissed him on the lips, and I said, I love you, man. I love you, man, you know. That's how I feel, you know. You don't know me. Don't disrespect me, you know. You know, who the you are to come and, you know, call me out, you know. And I'm going to stand, okay, I'm Puerto Rican here, but what are you then? Okay. You know, that he was from Philadelphia, and I remember that. Son of a gun, you know. But I kissed him. I told him I love him, and it was true. I loved him.
Conrad, you got to have him to the Conradison, man.
What a time today, Haku. We appreciate you taking a few minutes out with us. We'd love to let people know, you know, how to keep up with you. Is there anything we can plug or promote for you?
No. Just, you know, as the good Lord has been good, you know, that they have Rick on my side there. Got me, you know, his family is a great family, you know, Charlotte, that I'm so proud. She's, you know, it's remind me, you know, the working, you know, that they have the fathers, you know, that, you know, or maybe, I'm sorry, Rick, to say, you know, but she's so good.
She's better than me all day long. I'm the first to admit it. I have to say one thing, and I never like to end things on a sad note. But it's something I've learned to live with, and at Haku has too. But when my son Reed died, I got a phone call. I wasn't answering the phone, and the voicemail said, "Say it's not so."
Yeah,
I'll never forget it. I have it saved on my phone to this day.
Thank you.
Yep.
You know,
Say it's not so. He loved my kids, and my kids loved him. All of them.
Yeah. You know, you're my family. Always. No matter.
We've been together a long time, man.
Much. Yeah. We've been on the road. You know.
We gotta get you and me and Gomez and Conrad together one night and have just one night out again.
Let's do it.
One night. Gomez is really settled down too. What the hell?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, Goldberg, I don't know what's, you know, family, I guess, you know, have the, you have also, I guess, a son now. So he's really, you know,
You're talking about Gomez.
Oh, Gomez. Gomez.
Yeah. He's got a baby girl.
Yeah. I saw him a couple of times, you know, on this side here, you know, that's where I'm working at right now. So, where are you guys at, Rick? Are you still in the Carolinas?
No, I'm in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
okay.
And you're in Kissimmee, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, WrestleMania is right there next year, man. I'm sure we'll see a lot of you. And it will be my mission and my pleasure to get you out one night.
Yes. We'll go out for two.
We'll just go to some quiet place.
Quiet place, please.
Thank you so much.
I love you, man.
Yeah,
thank you so much. Thank you so much. I love you, buddy.
Yeah, love you too. Great, you know, you guys take care.
Thank you, sir.
Stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, please take care of Rick there.
I'll do it. I'll do my best. It's a full-time job.
All right. Of course. All right. Love you, Rick.
Love you, Haku. Bye, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.